What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G on the Fight Game Podcast. John and I here tonight talking about blood and guts. This show, I can't imagine it's going to be super long, because what did the AEW show have, 3 matches or 4 matches?
Four matches, I think. Four, let me see.
Yeah, four matches, yeah, and yeah, one yeah. of them was a squash.
Yes.
Jade and Layla Gray was a squash. So, yep. 4 matches, one of them took just about the second half of the show, so almost a full hour. So, yeah, in recapping that show, it's not going to be too long because we don't have a ton to talk about. We will take a little bit of time talking about that main event. But before that, we will talk a little bit about Forbidden Door. By this time, everyone's had their takes, but John, I want to just let John get in his favorite match of that show and any other thoughts. And then, I don't know, I guess we kind of have to talk about Money in the Bank, though it's maybe the least, when it comes to interest and when it comes to non-hardcore fan WWE interest, this might be one of the lowest performing shows that I'm talking about just the hype. We'll see what happens in the ring. Those Money in the Bank shows, because of the surprises that could happen, they're often, you know, sort of worth watching, but man, the hype for this one is really bad. So we'll talk about this stuff. John and I, our second show that we've done in 2 days, I don't really talk about the Patreon that much, the Fight Game Media Patreon, because F4W, this is a, when we started doing the show, it was a subscription-based show. We were behind the paywall. If you had a subscription to the Wrestling Observer / Figure Four Online, our show came with that. But now the show is, you know, we have the free feed. We have, you know, if you're an Apple Podcast listener, if you're a Spotify listener, wherever you get your podcast, you can now listen to this show. So I'm a little bit more okay talking about it. I don't talk about it a lot, but I just wanted to kind of mention it because, you know, John and I on the Patreon, we were talking about how we thought about recording on Monday, and our Patreon show is the 1998 Raw review. Last year we covered 97, and this year we've been covering 98, just to kind of relive the Austin stuff, because I haven't really watched it back. And we were both talking about, like, oh my gosh, we're so tired, so we had to postpone it a day. And so I kind of want to check in with John, like, how's your energy level going tonight?
It's great. I'm caffeinated. I got an Americano. Wife got me Americano. She did a coffee run tonight.
Oh, wow. And that's awesome.
So, yeah. I'm throwing left hands like Terry Funker on the house. I'm ready to record, baby. I'm ready to record.
All right. So, I guess the question is, because I have some caffeine, too. I have a Zoa energy drink, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's energy company, his energy drink company. I've cut it though. I've mixed it with water so that it just is not just gonna hit me and then I won't fall asleep. Though I don't usually have a problem with caffeine and going to bed, though. I don't know, a lot of people have like a real caffeine sensitivity. I don't necessarily have one. It'll just sort of help me, you know, stay alert, but I could generally just go to bed even after drinking some caffeine right before.
Yeah, I mean, just Americano kind of gets me going because it has that extra shot of the espresso or something like that in it.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of gets me jazzed up. Regular coffee, no. I mean, last night I was up to like 1 something, get my lunch ready for work and everything after recorded. I know I was up late, but I'm pumped, man. I'm ready to talk about some blood and guts.
Yes.
And anything else you have on tap to this
all right,
week?
So if anybody wants more of us, you can go to patreon.com/fightgamemedia. There's other stuff there as well. We have a Dynamite show, which was also tonight, but Paul Fontaine and Jeff Hawkins. And if you do listen to the Dynamite show, send both of those guys good wishes. They sort of explain at the end of that show. Mm. And then, you know, we have a Joshi show, which is kind of the interesting one because you don't see a lot of Joshi podcasts, and Scott Edwards and Parker Klein do a really good job at kind of cultivating a little bit of community around there. And Scott is so pumped up. Scott's doing so much stuff. Happy to have him. And then Mike and JD do the Brace for Impact show. So The Patreon's pretty fun, and then we have like bonus shows from our free Fight Game Media Network shows. So it's pretty cool little Patreon. It's very inexpensive. So just if you need more content, it is there for you.
And since we're plugging, can I plug my Take It Home podcast this weekend coming up?
Go for it.
I'm gonna be covering New Japan Strong. I'm gonna specifically the match between our very own Filthy Tom Lawler defending the New Japan Openweight title against Fred Rosser. I watched the match. I'm going to review it. I'm going to talk about their history. I'm really excited about this coming up this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun.
What a incredible sort of change of character for Fred Rosser.
He's unbelievable. You know, unfortunately, he was kind of like, didn't get a chance to really shine too much. At least, here and there, but seeing him in New Japan Strong has been, you just realize, man, this guy's really good. And how do we sleep on him for so long, right? And and I'm just really happy for him. And he's all his matches are solid. And, you know, I love his series with Tom Lawler, which I'm going to be talking about on this weekend show. Look for it on our Fight Game Media free feed out there. So wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, Big Dave, who we got to hang out with this last weekend when we watched Forbidden Door. Big Dave credits one of his friends, who he always says is like one of his smartest friends. And this person said, what NXT should do is NXT should like cut all of their wrestlers and see who tries to then book themselves on the indies because they love wrestling. And those people who try to make it outside of WWE, then WWE just brings those guys back in and they go, okay, like we're going here. Like you guys really love wrestling. We're going to find a spot. And then the people who were just in it to be in WWE who don't want to do anything else, then you let them go and you're like, okay, like, you know, you only want, you know, you're not really about the wrestling piece. You're just about sort of the notoriety with WWE piece. Fred Rosser is exactly who this smart person Dave talks about. I'm gonna guess I'm not 100% sure, but whenever Dave says smart friend, I always just assume it's Mike Tenay, because imagine having a smarter wrestling friend than Mike Tenay. Like, he's like one of the smartest. I don't know if it's him. That's just my guess, but Fred Rosser fits that to a T, right? I don't remember how he left WWE exactly, but to go from being on Monday Night Raw, being with Titus O'Neil, having this gimmick, you know, that well, was
Nexus before that.
And
right?
Nexus before that. Yeah. But they were over to the fans. They weren't over to where WWE was going to push them. But then to go like, okay, like that said and done, now I'm going to remake myself. And to do it the way that he's done it has just been so tremendous. And, man, you can't give that guy enough kudos for what he's done. And, you know, now, like, where does, you know, what can he do in New Japan Strong? What are his options? I kind of want to kind of wonder, you know, what he thinks about where, you know, what is, is his goal to go to Japan and wrestle in Japan for New Japan, you know, in the future, be in the G1 or whatever? Or is his... does he want to, you know, get back to the big time U.S. scene? Like, it'll be interesting to see what he does.
I think definitely his immediate goal is to start doing tours in Japan, right? I'm so happy that Tom Lawler is going to be in the G1. Actually, I think if I was New Japan, I would have put Fred Rosser in there, like two representatives of New Japan Strong in that G1 tournament. There's four brackets. Why not? And it would have probably... I don't know. Just I think his work has been so good. Even though I haven't watched it consistently, I probably should. But you know, there's so much out there.
Yeah, it's hard. It's you know, the thing about it is almost like, you know, it's good, but you also know that nothing crazy is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of explain what I mean a little bit later when we talk about this Dynamite show, because Dynamite, AEW's Dynamite, is really about like how many crazy matches can we put on TV. And you know, my whole thought on wrestling TV is really less about the matches and more about cool shit happening that I want to have a connection to the following week and the following and the following, and just kind of get locked in that way. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the reason, you know, Strong, if you just want to watch good wrestling, Strong is the perfect show to watch. The problem is for me, I need stuff to happen, and some of the angles where stuff does happen, it is still pretty low end compared to stuff that happens in WWE and AEW that I have to cover. So I have to cover that stuff.
There's some, obviously it's very Americanized, right? Not as say WWE or AEW, but they do some angles from what I remember that I was kind of like, I wish they kind of lead this off, you know. I don't mind storylines and angles. It's just some of it just kind of more like, I don't know, just. And then some of the talent too, like a lot of great talent that they use on New Japan Strong, but there's also some other talent I'm like kind of questioning why they're there. But but overall, I mean, Filthy Tom has, from what I've seen, he's been great. And it's like a really cool dynamic that they were building to. You have Filthy Tom Lawler, right? Filthy, in a group with Team Filthy, the bullies of that roster, right? Of that brand. And then you have Fred Rosser, not only no days off, but stop the hate. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect dynamic of him versus bullies, right? This, you know, so his message comes out. It's like a, in its own way, a version of Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. You have the hardworking everyman Dusty Rhodes versus the cocky, arrogant rich champion and Ric Flair. This is a version of it. And I thought, you know, it was really, overall, really well done. Though I'm going to break some things down that I you know, I'm not going to just gloat about for the whole, you know, 40 minutes. I there's some issues I have with certain matches and angle that they leading into it. But other than that, when it comes to the match quality, I mean, if you're tired like me of like everything looks so like choreographed and boom, boom, boom. If you want to see like a struggle and people look like they really want to beat each other and have an issue with each other, watch Tom Lawler versus Fred Rosser, and that will bring you back to those that type of wrestling. If you like that style, which I wish everyone would, you know, but you know, I think you're really going to enjoy their matches. So.
All right, so that'll be up on Sunday on the Fight Game Media free network, which is available wherever you listen to podcasts, unlike the Patreon, which is just on the Patreon website. So, okay, let's get going. First, we should probably talk about a little bit about Forbidden Door. I've given my thoughts on We're Live Pal already about what my favorite match was, but what are your overall thoughts about the show now? I know that, you know, since we watched it together, you know, we were watching with other people, so we were not like focus, laser beam on the show. And it was a very fun, that makes it more fun to me. If I got to watch this stuff by myself in my office, it's not as fun.
Yeah.
But overall, did you like the show? What was your favorite match? All that stuff.
I think I liked the second half better than the first half. The first half just felt like the same. I remember Dave, like, you know, cause Dave's always like, I mean, so he's so busy. Like a lot of people are like, oh, you get to watch the show with Dave. You know, you're probably just yapping and talking. Yeah, you know, Dave's like dialed in and focused.
Yeah.
You know, he's typing, he's getting inside scoops and all that kind of stuff. Getting texts from everyone in the locker room. And, you know, but I mean, it's always fun though to see my friends and hang out with my friends.
Yeah,
and we just laugh. But like with the first half of the show, for me, when Dave asked, like, "So what's the best match so far?" He'll pop up every once in a while. "What's the best match so far?" You know, he wants to know your feedback right away.
Yeah,
and I'm like, honestly, all these kind of matches just feel the same to me, right? Like they're all bunch of false finishes and blah blah blah. It's like, you know, there's no like real difference to me. But I kind of prefer the second half. One match, I know everyone's raving about the Ospreay and Orange Cassidy match. I was so busy talking to Mary Firpo, the daughter of the Pampero Firpo. Like, I wasn't really paying attention to that match as much. I can't really say it was good or bad. And a little bit also with Zack Sabre Jr. and Cesaro or Claudio, but I did watch most of that. So I like that match. But I am going to pick a match that was early in the night because I'm going to go with the four-way for the All Atlantic Championship, because I thought for a four-way for being with is All Out Action. I thought they did the best. I think I would have liked the title IWGP title four way more, but unfortunately, because of you know Adam Cole's injury, the finish was didn't come off the way they wanted to, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just an unfortunate situation there. So I'm gonna go for that four way All Atlantic. I think just for. You know, because a four-way match, you're not looking for perfect in-ring psychology. It's psychology, all about action. Yeah, it's all about action. Yep. And those guys are all great athletes, and they did a great job.
Now, her name is not Mary Firpo, she was the teacher for my mm-hmm. stepkids.
Yeah,
and so I always am asked about Mrs. Freeze. So she's Mary Freeze, and she I don't think she's hiding that in any way. So we're not giving away any information.
I love you, Mary, sweetheart.
She's so cool. The fact that she comes and watches wrestling with us is.
I always wonder why she wants to come to that crazy house to watch wrestling. I understand. It's she's so close to her dad.
It's in her blood, man.
It's in her blood. It's a connection to your dad still, and you know, to watch wrestling with us. And I do like talking to her about her dad, and we were talking about I think I asked her dad what her dad's finisher was, and we're going over all that, and that was fun. And we started looking at old pictures of him when he was in a Russian, and all that, and so that was really cool. That's always really cool. And I would love talking to her about family stuff and everything. So great woman.
There was nothing really going on juicy at Dave's, as far as I can remember. I did.
There's one thing.
Okay, wait.
I can't say it, though.
Okay.
Yeah, sworn to secrecy.
I can't even remember. I don't remember a
certain upcoming result.
Okay.
That we're kind of going over.
I did measure his room. His office to see if we can put a green screen.
Oh, that's right. You're put to work. If anyone want to come and help me measure it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be late.
Jeremy. I knew Jeremy was going to help. Yeah, Jeremy's always up to help. And he definitely helped me. But it was a pretty. And you know why? You know, a lot of times what happens is when we watch the WWE pay-per-views, we have so much more time to talk to Dave because. There's a 5-minute match and then a 15-minute several video packages that we've already seen if you watch WWE TV, and that's how they do their shows. So there's so much more downtime, but AEW is just like boom, match, boom, mm-hmm. match, boom, match, and we can't really talk to Dave because he's got focus.
He's in the zone. Yeah. He's in the zone like Ken Shamrock 98 Raw.
Bringing it back. Quickly, just I mentioned Money in the Bank, and you know, you and I, when we first started going to hang out with Dave, it was around WWE pay-per-view. Like that's what we were going over his house to watch. And nowadays, outside of WrestleMania and maybe SummerSlam and Royal Rumble, unless it's something really big, we're kind of like, eh. We'll catch it on Monday, you know, kind of in the background kind of thing. And wow, Money in the Bank is maybe the least hyped WWE card for this level of a pay-per-view that I can remember.
Yeah.
No Roman. Obviously no Cody, because Cody got hurt. Cody would have been a big part of the show. And if Cody did not get hurt, I do believe people would be way more interested in this show. Matt Riddle did get into the Money in the Bank match, but they had almost beat him a couple weeks ago, and then he had to kind of sneak his way back in.
Did he get the second chance?
Yeah, the loser's chance battle royal that he got in there. No Edge, as far as we know. Now Edge may be a surprise, but Edge dumped out of that Judgment Day group. Mm-hmm. Ronda is on the show, but no Charlotte, no Sasha, obviously.
She's working Italia, though.
She's working Italia.
That should be a good match, yeah, I think.
It should be all right. And most of the promotion that they're doing for that match is in Instagram. They're shaming each other on Instagram.
Oh, God.
Becky has been on like a losing streak. Like that's been her gimmick of late. But she did get in the Money in the Bank match. And I do wonder if a babyface turn is coming. I don't know that for sure, but just the way that they've been booking her is like she's been so frustrated because she can't win, and she finally snuck in and won and got the last spot in the women's match. But yeah, like it's just been, I would say, you know, as someone who tries to keep up with Raw because I do so many shows and, you know, as much as I can, I'll watch SmackDown. So I'm not like that diehard WWE TV watcher, but, you know, I try to watch as much as I can. And wow, like this, the hype for this show is really way, way, way down. And when Dave asked us all, you know, are people going to come over? I think one person said yes. And the rest of us were like, I think we need to hang out with our significant others.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents are also going to be down this weekend, and they haven't been down since they left, actually, like 3 years ago. So they haven't even, this is going to be the first time. So I'm going to be hanging out with them, not going to be watching Money in the Bank, but I will watch it. I will watch it probably Monday at some point, just because, you know, you got to see what happens when you talk about this stuff. But yeah, unfortunately, just uninterested. And I feel like a lot of people are like that.
Well, with me, yeah. I mean, for me specifically, like the only time I even thought about it is like that time at Days and Days, like, hey, you guys coming for Money in the Bank? I'm like, when is it? And he's like, and this week is coming up. I was like, oh, no, I can't, definitely can't do it. And then just when I text you today, right before I was finishing watching Dynamite, I say, hey, what we're covering Dynamite and what else, other topics? You're like, I'm gonna ask you a little bit of Money in the Bank. I'm like, oh, yes, this weekend. I totally forgot about it again. So I think I'll do what I've been doing with WWE pay-per-view, especially the B-level pay-per-views. I'll just wait to see the results and see if there's any kind of like chatter of what was good and the checkout. May I'll watch a match or two on the show.
All right, let's talk about Dynamite here. It was the Blood and Guts match, which is kind of crazy. Now, this is an interesting strategy because they go from the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And usually when you have a pay-per-view, there's a little bit more interest in your TV to kind of see where you're going next. There was no real connection to Forbidden Door on this show when it came to the matches with New Japan. There was one interview with the Young Bucks that we'll get to where they did. There is going to be a match on Rampage with New Japan wrestlers on it. But they decided, well, here is our show right after the pay-per-view, we'll have a little bit more interest, and then we're going to put on like our biggest Dynamite in quite a long time with this Blood and Guts match. So that's an interesting test to see how that does with the ratings. As we know, the ratings have been down. Not only have the ratings been down, and I think a lot of that is probably the fact that AEW fans were seeing New Japan wrestlers who they probably weren't really sure who those folks were. Some of the fans, not all of them, obviously the hardcores knew. Basketball playoffs and hockey playoffs were a big part of this, but also this is something that I think is really interesting, and I wish I knew more about it. I read that TV viewing, Dave has mentioned this a little bit, but I listened to some other sort of like entertainment business stuff, sports business stuff, and they were saying that just in general, television viewing is down. Now, I don't know if that generally happens in June, but from what I understand, it was like way more down this month. But that did not hurt WWE because WWE really manipulated a couple ratings there to their benefit. They had John Cena. Like they are, from a promotion aspect, they had a really good last three or four shows. And, you know, some of that was based on the CEO and chairman being in the press for bad reasons. But it'll be interesting to see what they do here because my feeling is that for whatever reason, AEW has just not been, at least Dynamite has just not been as good. And we've talked about it here. We've talked about the car crash TV and the We Can't Breathe and just going from thing to thing to thing. And then it doesn't always make sense. And so this show, you know, they're trying to build a rating and they put like their biggest possible television match on for the Dynamite following Forbidden Door. I hope that, you know, you have that hour long match. You would hope that it holds a rating, but who knows? Because as has been mentioned in our Fight Game Media group, The idea that this match is like half everyone beating each other's behind, mm-hmm. and then half, oh, now the match really starts. You kind of wonder if people checked out or not, knowing, because they said that on the telecast often. Match hasn't started yet. Match hasn't started yet. It doesn't really start. And that's War Games, right? That's War Games and then the match beyond, right? That's how it, the whole premise was built. You had the beginning, then all 10 people were in the ring, and then the match beyond begins, and now we can go towards the finish. So I'll be interested in seeing what those quarter hours look and such.
I think the rating is going to be pretty strong, though. And we'll talk about a certain thing I thought that should have been on this show to make this show even feel bigger. As we get into the rundown here.
Okay, so starts. Taz and Excalibur are the two announcers here. It wasn't Excalibur and JR and Tony, though JR and Tony did come in different times. I wonder why they started to do that for this show. They did it at the pay-per-view, right? Mm-hmm. You had Excalibur and Kevin Kelly and Taz were the threesome calling the pay-per-view, and then Shivani came in, then JR came in. But I was kind of surprised. I didn't think they were going to do this for TV. Do you think that this is a good move? Do you think it's a bad move? JR did not have his strongest remembering everybody's name tonight.
Or Taz, too. I think a couple, like, you know. But you know, I think it is. Was it December when JR was battling his cancer?
Yeah.
He mentioned that he would be taking a lesser role as the announcer. His schedule will be lightened up, right?
Yeah.
So maybe this is his way of like only being used to call certain matches, the bigger matches, I guess. Yeah. Right. So his legendary, you know, as legendary commentary, he comes in to cover the main events or the last, you know, few matches on the card. I think I like it. So it makes him feel special.
Yeah.
I think it leaves him, he can avoid doing the stuff that's going to drive him crazy. And he's just going to be like, you know, upset watching it. Shivani, I kind of like him just as a backstage guy. Yeah. Even an in-ring interviewer, you know, sometimes people just take the mic and he just walks off, but they can kind of like focus him there and then maybe put him on Rampage. And then from what I understand on the commentary tonight, Rampage is going to be, the deck's going to be shuffled when it comes to their team.
Interesting.
They mentioned it. They mentioned a quick mention of that. So I wondered what that's going to be. I think Jericho needs to not be on Rampage anymore as a commentator. He just is so, he screams and yell. It's annoying. I'd rather just put mute on. I like Taz and we'll see who's going to be. Like, I think Excalibur and Taz are fine, just them two for Rampage. But we'll see what they're going to do come Friday, or may it be spoiled before then with the results.
And then we also had William Regal come in for the main event as well.
I thought he was fantastic in the commentary for the main event, actually. I don't know what you thought.
He's always really good. He's got a really quick wit. He's got a good sense of humor. And he puts the right guys over. Now these guys are his team, but you know, I thought he made and I like his old school language, and you know, and him throwing back to David Finley and guys like that.
I like when you talk about the rubbing alcohol and they're like, well, yeah, it could be rubbing alcohol, could be something. No, they talked about it. I was in the meeting. it was perfect. And then like when Mox brings out the thumbtacks, of course, right? You know, thumbtacks are going to show up in this thing. He goes, yeah, I try to talk him out of this one. Like he was like, but he's also was very, he's, you know, describing the pain and the physicality of what was happening out there. And I thought Jim Ross was actually pretty good personally, other than some of the names, you know, getting the names mixed up. I thought he did a really good job too as well. And same with Taz.
I said David Finley. I think he said David Taylor when they were talking about the uppercuts.
Oh yeah. The lifters. Yeah.
Okay. So opening match. Now, I think they believe that coming out of the match with Will Ospreay, Orange Cassidy is sort of back at a level where he is an important character on their television. He wasn't, but some of that was because of injury. Some of that is because he just kind of got lost in the shuffle a bit. And so he opens this show against Ethan Page. The best friends are out there with Orange Cassidy looking like the utmost goobers of all goobers in tie-dye. And, you know, like, I don't know. Let's just keep... I don't know how we do this, but can we keep Trent, like, on one... Like, he can either be serious Roppongi Vice Trent, or he could be goofball best friends Trent. I don't like him being both guys, because sometimes I go, oh, wow, like, this is pretty good. And then I see him back with Chucky T, and I'm just like, yeah, I just lost all of my respect for what he just did. So I don't know. I don't know what they should do there. But I guess Rocky's not going to be there all the time.
I mean, really, though, did Orange Cassidy really need to be out there? Did the best friends need to be out there for this?
When's the last time we saw Chucky T?
I know. I can't believe he's still there. You know, sorry. I mean, nothing against him personally. I don't know him personally. But as a talent, like, I don't get it. He looks horrible out there. And I just, you know, maybe they're just maybe Tony Khan's doing his old letting the contract just expire deal with him.
Well, because, I guess Alan Angels was just recently one that expired.
Yeah. But yeah, so I don't understand why he's out there. But what do you think of this match?
I thought that's a good question, because I wouldn't say that I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I know the crowd liked a lot of the spots and a lot of stuff that Orange did really popped them. But, you know, they were hot. He is a character that they really enjoy, most of that live crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that Ethan Page necessarily looked like anything special. He was just there to kind of get Orange over. And this is the problem with a lot of the talent, is you see something in certain guys. And because they have so many guys, there's always like, let's wait and see. Oh, let's wait and see. Like Scorpio Sky did that whole thing, right? Like, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. Yeah. At some point, Ethan Page is going to have been an AEW wrestler for 2 years. And it's still going to be, you know, maybe we'll get Ethan Page to do something here. So I get it. I think they feel that Orange really got over Will Ospreay. So they're going to have him be in a match here. Ultimately, the thing that they did to pop the crowd was Ethan has him in the Razor's Edge like finisher, and Orange, like, he's trying to break the finisher, and the way that he breaks the finisher is he finally gets his hands in his pockets. Now, I could be super, like, straight wrestling fan and go like, I didn't like it, but, you know, there's so many things that start out just in this fashion that then get over and get over in a big way. Because when I saw that, I was like, oh gosh, I don't really like that. But then I thought, because we've been watching a lot of this 98 Raw, I was like, you know, the people's elbow is kind of stupid too. And Rock, obviously it's Rock, so it just becomes cooler because it's him. But I don't know, I'm going to wait and see on some of the stuff. Maybe he can continue to be a big deal like he was against Will. Or maybe it was more Will than it was him. And that's my belief, is that it was Will.
Yeah.
Really more than Orange from that match. But yeah, and he wins with... So they kick out the best friends, because Dan Lambert says, you know, these guys don't have a manager's license and they need to leave. And Bryce Remsburg's like, yeah, you're right. Get out of here, guys.
And then the best friends have never seen wrestling ever, apparently. They didn't realize they needed a manager's license to be out there. That's because they go out there every other match, and no one ever says anything.
Yeah. Dan Lambert pulled the card on him.
Yeah.
So basically, Lambert is on the apron trying to interfere. He's got orange juice in his hand. Orange Cassidy starts messing with him, doing the soft taps. Dan Lambert's getting frustrated. He pretends to like wind up to hit Lambert, and Lambert kind of covers. And he steals the OJ. He takes a big drink. Page is behind him. He ducks Page, hits a Superman punch. Then Lambert is still on the apron. He spits orange juice in his eyes. This is the part that I didn't like, which is you do all of that, and they're trying to get over a body slam as a finisher?
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, not the, their logic, there was a story basically of the heavyweight Ethan Page, he's so much bigger. He's going to, you know, he's a break him a little, the little twig in half. And, you know, it's like, so he's, so they're building up to the, you know, the giant body slam, and it's just stupid. It's just a one joke thing. And I didn't like this match at all. Not my thing. I don't get Orange Cassidy. I know their fans love him, but to me, I just think no matter what, Orange Cassidy is going to be that same level on this show. He's going to be the lovable comedy act in the middle. That's, but I think this match really hurt Ethan Page, in my opinion. I think Ethan Page could be something, really. He has good size. He can talk. He has a good look, though. He looks heavier than he did before, but I think he could have been a main event guy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think this booking here did way more damage than it did for Orange Cassidy. I wish they had someone else in this spot who I don't know, but I just think Ethan Page, it's time to get kind of behind this guy and see what he can do. And this just really, really put him back. And yeah, it didn't start off good for me, this show.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we'll talk about this in a second, because it's the second match. That match was also a little goofy, but the humor in that match I kind of like more so than the Orange Cassidy kind of humor. The Ass Boys and Max Caster.
Oh, the third match, because there was another get over match with Luchasaurus before that.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
The third match.
Yeah.
With, you know, the Danhausen, like, that is a little bit more of like my, what would you call it? The Gaga, like that kind of match. Like, I enjoy that a little bit more than I enjoyed the Orange Cassidy stuff.
That was fun comedy, because it's still base. There's still, like, you know, the whole hands in the pockets and stuff. It just, I mean, I'm just waiting for this guy to have new material. And it's been, what, 3.5 years now? So, I mean, year five, we're going to be like, well, he still puts his hand in his pocket. Like, what's going to be different, you know? I hope he changes up. Everyone has to kind of evolve. We'll see if he does.
But we're supposed to think that him doing that is a psychological thing that he's doing to these wrestlers, right? Because they're so frustrated that he's taking this so not seriously that he uses it as a psychological advantage.
Yeah, and then, unfortunately, any person that kind of stumbles on this, be like, why don't I just punch that guy? If he's, you know what I mean? Like what's his name? The first spot, he put his hand in his pocket, and Paige knocks him down. There's Orange Cassidy with his legs up and his hands in his pocket, just his back flat to the mat. Like, and Ethan Page just starts putting his hands up in the air, like, yeah, look what I did. Like, wouldn't you just really just start kicking him? Like, that's what my dad would try to say if he watched this, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and, but, you know, not saying old, you know, a lot of just people that casual viewers aren't watching this right now. It's just the hardcore. So it's, yeah, it's what you get. They got to grow past that, I think. I don't know. But then Jimmy Valiant was a goofy character. But Jimmy Valiant came in and punched and kicked and stomped and dropped an elbow, and that was it. You know, like, he was always kind of a goofy guy in the middle. And you still believe that he was at least can kick someone's butt.
All right, Christian came out. He doubled down on the cheap heat. Mm-hmm. He said he was asked to apologize for making light of Luke Perry's death. Instead, he said he wishes Jungle Boy's entire family was dead. Well, except the mom.
Yeah.
Christian's a little bit hot on the mom. He's not wrestling tonight, even though he asked for a match, because he asked for it for Luchasaurus. He didn't ask for it for himself. And I guess he's just a mastermind now. He's like the smartest guy in the room. He's setting everything up, and he's getting people upset, and he's calling all the shots. We don't have the explanation yet as to why Luchasaurus is on Christian's side. Well, I'm sure that'll be a storyline that will be told. But Luchasaurus had a match against Serpentico, and it was a squash, and he used a version of Jungle Boy's submission hold. So, well, it's coming, though, just what you said last week. Jungle Boy's got to cut a promo here.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what, you know, I imagine Christian can probably do maybe one more before Jungle Boy's got to answer him. Or, you know, Jungle Boy will probably run from the back and
attack him.
Want to fight him. But then he will sort of have to talk as well. And so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, the promo, I mean, what's he said about the whole family, but the mom? I mean, he now at this point in time, you have to kind of double down, as you said.
Yeah.
And go with it. You know, he's getting great heat out there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. And then, like, I'm kind of with it, him as a heel. You know, he's always better as a heel anyways. But then when he calls out Luchasaurus, I'm sorry. Just the guy looks ridiculous, and he's not that good. And I know, and then, did you tell his music was a little Kane-ish in the beginning part of it? Had a little Kane love in the fire. So I think they're trying to, but we've already seen this guy, you know, and I wish there was a better explanation. I mean, there probably will be eventually. But I think there was a little more. We could have saw a little more manipulation with Christian, not, you know, with Luchasaurus. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't like that part of it. I can't wait till we get Christian versus Jungle Boy, but I really don't want to see Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus right now. I just not into it. And this match is this get over match here he had with Serpento Tico, whatever his name is. Like, I don't know about his finisher being the version of the snare trap. I think that big man, you want to kind of see him do something a little more devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does it when he chokeslams Serpento Tico on the floor, which looked donk. And I'm like, if you would have just done something devastating in the ring, you wouldn't need that poor dude to take that bump on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Wasn't really into this as much.
All right. So then we got an interview with Scorpio Sky and Wardlow setting up a match. Not Wardlow's forte here to cut these cool guy promos, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Just very cold too. This just appears out of nowhere. Oh, here's back here. There's no physicality clause during this interview, and they quickly set up a title match, but it's no disqualification. So I guess that just means Ethan Page can freely interfere. Maybe some people from American Top Team could probably freely interfere. And honestly, this match here, I thought it should have booked, like, started off the show, because you're going to have this big audience with the not from coming from the pay-per-view. I think people are going to curious to see what they're going to do on Wednesday. And plus you have the Blood and Guts match. I think you open it up with Wardlow winning the title here. Just a straight destruction of Scorpio Sky. No disqualification. He could beat people up after if that's what you want. But, like, just he goes out there and destroys Scorpio Sky, you know, 1, 2, 3, because since that match with MJF, he's doing that stupid thing with Smart Mark Sterling and the security stuff, really kind of cooled off Wardlow. And he was the hottest thing going in that promotion. So I would have had him come out there and just quickly win the title, you know, Diesel over Bob Backlund, Massacre Garden, December of 94. You know, so seriously, that's what it should have been. That's what it needs to be. Like, boom, holy crap.
Okay, you know? Is he going to be in that Battle Royal on Rampage? Well, no, he's not, because he's going to be in this match.
So. Well, that Battle Royal is being taped tonight.
Yes.
So he technically could be in it. No, he can't. Well, he could have been, yeah.
Maybe. We'll see.
But he's not. Remember, he wants a TNT title right now. That's his goal.
Yeah, that's his thing. He wants to wait for Punk. He's waiting for Punk.
And he's tired of working these Battle Royals. They happen every 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. Another Battle Royal. So just in case people don't know, they're going to do a Battle Royal on Friday. What did Tony – what did they call it? It's not called
– Rampage Royal.
Rampage Royal?
Yeah.
So it's going to be for the first shot at Moxley, because since Moxley's the new interim champ, so it's to find the contender for him.
It's 20 man. There's two rings. They have two rings there for the Blood and Guts match. 10 and 10, right? And does it come down to
Battle Bowl?
Winner? Not a battle. yeah. Well, yes.
The winner of one ring against the winner of the other.
Yeah. One? Yeah. Does that? That's what it should be, right? I'm guessing.
I think.
Okay, we'll find out.
Luger and Sting. All right. So we had Max Caster coming out, does a rap about a bunch of different things, including Flint's tap water, which was definitely heat on Max for that line. It was Max and the Ass Boys against Danhausen and two people who we did not know, mystery partners for Danhausen. And you hear the FTR music play, crowd goes nuts. Now, I kind of wondered about FTR because they've been doing this of late where FTR comes and helps out the underdogs, essentially.
Yeah.
Danhausen, the ultimate underdog. No one expects him to win. And FTR comes and saves him. That's like a hot babyface move. You know, that's a... Your hot babyfaces come and save the day for guys like this. So it's an interesting role for them to be in, and they're doing a great job. It keeps them on TV. They've got two different sets of tag titles, so they're going to be wrestling all over the place. I'm sure they're going to be in that ROH pay-per-view, the, what is it called, Death Before Dishonor or whatever?
Yeah, July 23rd. Yeah.
So, man, these guys are living their best lives here with pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I thought this match was a lot of fun. Danhausen, God, I really like Danhausen. I just don't like him here. I think he works perfect on the indies, but he comes out, has this cool entrance, and I love his goofy look. He's a goofy guy.
Yeah.
And his promo was dog poop, dude. Like, I know he has that cadence of...
Yeah.
But it's just, for some reason, like... It just didn't work. He just quickly mumbled it, and it. Luckily, FTR is over.
Yeah.
So when their music hit, it got a reaction. But again, the match was fun. There was a lot of issues later on the match due to the greenness of Max Caster and the Gun Club. Like at one point where Dax makes, you know, he's hot, making his big hot tag. He comes in. And, you know, he punches Austin bumps, but then Max Caster like goes in way too early to get in there to take his shot and bump. So he's like too early. So that looks clunky. And then Max bumps instead of bumping out and out of the way. So Colton Gunn can come in to then get bumped with the punch. Max Caster bumps in front of Colton, and Colton has to stumble over him like a geek. and of course, later on, there was a swinging DET that was messed up, where Dax did not look happy, you know, and then of course, you know, hot tag to Danhausen, the FTR wins, and then Dax destroying that wheelchair looked more like, and he could be working me, but that looked like just frustration of how the match ended, and you know, because he's such a perfectionist, right?
Yeah. So I will say for Dax, I get it.
Yeah.
I think most people saw specifically the one move that they would have seen was the Austin Gunn and Dax neckbreaker thing that the both guys almost looked like they died on that spot. But at the end of the day, here's what I'll say. Actually, my first question to you is, how did WWE miss on Billy Gunn's sons?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't pick them up, or maybe they, you know, maybe it was like the Adam Cole thing where they're like, we're not ready to sign you yet. Go get some more seasoning, go get a little more rougher, a little more older looking, and then we'll bring you in, you know, like what they did with Adam Cole. Maybe they were eventually going to sign him, but then his dad got released. Their dad got released and ends up at AEW. So there's that pipeline there, and they're good. I love the Gun Club. And if FTR wasn't beaten in multiple singles matches leading into, you know, them winning the IWGP title, like you could have done a thing where the Gun Club did score a pin after some, you know, shenanigans on FTR here, and then build up to a future title shot between the Gun Club and FTR, because they had a really good match about a couple months back. I love the Gun Club. I wish they could do more, because they're a hell of a young team.
They would be one of, you know, my favorite young tag team in NXT if I still watched Racist Against Asians NXT. Like that's where they would fit in perfectly as like this NXT 2.0, and he'd be rooting for them because they would miss stuff, but you're still like, ah, but there's, you know, with the other brothers, the Creed brothers, you know, can you imagine those matches? Just
they would fly all around for the Creed brothers. You know, especially that Austin Gunn. I love Austin Gunn. I love his selling, his body language out there. I love that he goes up for it, takes a damn backdrop. Man, I missed a good backdrop. He takes a pretty good one. I think they should be doing more instead of like playing the, this family issue with dad loves the Acclaim more than he does loves his own sons. Weird.
Danhausen has does he have Austin on his shoulders at the finish? Is that who he's got on his shoulders?
What does he finish with? It must be Austin because he's the smaller of three.
So this is when Anthony Bowens, who's been in a wheelchair, jumps out of his wheelchair and has his crutch, and he is about to hit Danhausen, but Danhausen sees him and immediately curses him. And Bowens swings the crutch to hit Danhausen, misses, hits Gunn, and then they lose the match. And this is where the Ass Boys are upset. And, you know, Daddy Billy Gunn, he's like, no, you guys cannot be upset. He got physical with his sons, man.
Yeah, stupid. A really good booker would use the Acclaim boombox to give him a big win when they finally use it on someone instead of using it for false finishes and not it means nothing. And also a good booker or experienced booker would probably, when Anthony Bowens finally gets out of that wheelchair after he's been in it for a while, interferes and actually wins the match for Max Caster. You know, like it's so it, that moment, that surprise, it got a reaction from the audience when he popped up in there and got in the ring, and it was foiled and meant nothing. And
yeah, it was a little swervy.
If you're gonna have that moment, like make it a big win to get some heat on a babyface and get some heat on Max Caster on their team, right? Like maybe Max Caster could have done that to Dax or Cash in a singles match, and then they start feuding with FTR. You know, just wasted stuff like that. Stuff like you have it, you really have to put it in your pocket until like you feel it's like you're ready to pull a trigger on it. You just don't do it because you do it once and that's it. It's never gonna mean anything again.
Well, you know what WWE has taught us when they do stuff like that, which is they will do what you say and make it important with, you know, the one or two top guys on the company, and then the undercard or the middle part of the card, they don't really care. They just do stuff and it just happens, and then everyone forgets.
Yeah.
All right. We got a promo from Sanjay Dutt and Jay Lethal about the next ROH show, Death Before Dishonor, calling out Samoa Joe. So I imagine that's when we get the ROH TV title match, just for that pay-per-view. When Joe comes back from whatever acting or he's doing something in Hollywood, I think. Yeah. And then we got Jade Cargill, who asked Stoke Dog. I'm going to go with Stoke Dog. She asked him, you know, she's like, I need somebody, open challenge. And Layla Gray, who I've never seen before, she was the... Tony Khan and Stoke were in Twitter last night arguing back and forth about Layla Gray and whether or not she had an AOL email address and stuff like that. And so Jade wins this match. It was mostly a squash. Layla may have gotten one thing. Mm-hmm. And after the match, Jade tells Stokely she needs some real competition. So Stokely says, you know, look, we put the call out last night. Athena and Chris Statlander, they're too lazy. And that word lazy must have pissed them off, man, because they start running.
Yeah.
They were running down the ring. They start to double team on Jade. It's kind of like remember when Brock Lesnar first started in WWE and they put the Hardys like as his first feud, but it wasn't just one Hardy. It was like both Hardys against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. That's kind of what start hitting him with chair shots super hard and like, oh man, imagine if he got knocked out. Those chair shots were nasty. I still got a concussion from watching that.
That's kind of what this looked like. It was like, oh, like they had like, it has to be two against one because she's unstoppable. Mm-hmm. And then Layla Gray helps her. and pushes one of them off the top rope. I think it was Athena. And so it looked like
she's a
maybe
baddie.
She was going to be one of the baddies. And she kind of had this little air about her. And she's very attractive. She fits with the baddies. But Jade was kind of like, I'm not so sure about this one. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, there's always something with something. I can't just, honestly, I actually like this match a lot. This is probably one of my favorite Jade matches she's had. I thought it was perfectly done, honestly. I mean, I'm sure there's some small things in there, but I'm talking about just like, you know, the structure of the match I thought was fine. And that, you know, Layla Gray got 5 stars from me. I was like, hello. And then, you know, and Jade's gorgeous, you know, there's a beautiful match out there. And I just wish, like, you didn't need that swerve with Layla Gray. I honestly, it would have been better for that match they had, even though it was, you know, a dominant win by Jade, but Layla got a couple little things in there, showed her fight. It might be cool. Maybe Jade gave her stamp of approval on this maybe mm-hmm. future baddie instead. Mm-hmm. And then you could have, like, you know, had done something. But then again, here comes the baby face and they got their butt kicked.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. Haven't we even seen Athena wrestle yet on the show? Has she wrestled Dynamite yet? Maybe Rampage. I don't know if I watched
it. Good question. She may have wrestled on Rampage, but I couldn't tell you for sure.
Yeah, she needs a win or something on TV.
Yeah, totally.
And it felt like they were going with Athena first, and then it's going to be Chris Statlander. So I'm guessing Chris is there trying to... I'm going to see if they can keep it away, but maybe till September? But that can't be, right? That seems too long.
I don't know.
With Athena first.
July, August, September, so...
And it's early July. September.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's 3 months.
You can have Athena first sometime in July, like end of July, early August, and then you can have Jade and Statlander at the pay-per-view.
All right, so now we'll talk about... Actually, there was a AW Grand Slam promo for their Arthur Ashe Stadium show, second time that they're going to do it in New York. All I will say is everyone that I talked to who was there said concessions and parking sucked. Now, I don't know if they'll be able to fix the parking because it's in New York. But I saw something where they said that they're going to make sure that the concessions are much better this year.
That was your Live Pal partner, our good friend Andrew Zarian. He was on that scoop. He was doing his due diligence and contacting that damn Arthur Ashe Stadium to say, hey, people are complaining.
That's his town, man. That's his town.
He's going to be the future mayor. Let's talk about this Young Bucks promo, please.
Okay, go for it. All their friends are hurt.
So everyone's hurt.
Just them and the belts.
They're sucking the energy out of the show. After I saw that pretty decent Jay Cargill-Legrea match, they brought this bring me down. I my notes here, Young Bucks pre-tape promo. And I just have a bunch of Z's going across my screen. That's what it was. Boring. And then Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto are going to challenge them for the AEW tag team titles. I don't know. Wouldn't the New Japan guys want the New Japan tag team titles that FTR just won? They're the most over team right now. Young Bucks, I know things got switched around and wasn't in Tony's plans, but the Young Bucks, they just seem cold as ice right now to me.
I didn't hate this promo like you did. I did think that they got a little too cute making fun of Hiroki Goto, because if he was a household name in AEW lore, then you can make fun of his last name and people will know who you're talking about. But they started calling him Goto, and I was like, wait, who are you guys talking about? I was like, I think you're talking about Goto. So you can't really make fun of somebody's name unless like their name is over. Because the fans are like, I have no idea who you're talking about.
Yeah.
That was the problem that I had with it. But, you know, it's just their current heel style. You know, I don't mind it as much as you do. And just a way to promote the match for Rampage.
What they needed to do, I'm trying to remember how they pitched it. But I think they usually pitch the stuff like being like the interview's happening right now, not like recorded earlier. But they need to say, this was recorded earlier from the Young Bucks. Boom, show that promo. I can't believe that actually made tape. And I said, yeah, that's good. Show that promo. And then when you come out of that promo, say, you heard that right. Young Bucks have, you know, accepted the challenge of Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi. Now you do a quick video package, just a highlight, a 45-second highlight of them. I believe they won on the pre-show. I didn't watch it, but I think they won a match on the pre-show, right?
No. Buy-in?
I think they were on the buy-in.
Did they lose or did they win? I don't remember. I was measuring Dave's office.
Oh, that's I wasn't there yet, so I didn't know.
I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, I'm saying like, okay, if they didn't win, at least show how. I hope they would win if they had this plan for them to get a title shot and stick around for in the week. I assume they did win, and then I would have.
Yeah, they beat the factory.
Okay, perfect. So yeah. Just show like highlights of that. You know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and also intersplice some. I'm sure they can get footage from New Japan. Intersplice some footage of them in Japan. Goto with his championships he won. Yoshihashi with, I think he only won the six-man tag. Whatever. Show him like a something. Like, make it important. And by the way, you know what we never saw on this show? Highlights of the Forbidden Door.
Well, that's what I said at the top. Like, there was no connective tissue at all to that show that we just watched.
I'm sorry I missed that, what you said. But like Orange Cassidy comes out. They talk about his match with Ospreay. He's just making his entrance. There's no highlights of that. They could have just, you know, put a split screen up, show some highlights of that match, and show some highlights throughout the show of the pay-per-view, because you can still order it, you know, and get people to, you can still, you know, go check out the replay, check out this great match everyone's talking about, Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy, blah, 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 you know, whatever. You know, WWE does a really good job at, you know, make sure and reminding people what happened on the paper. Tony, I know he's like stressed for time. He crams a lot in. I know he's probably really stressed this show because the Blood and Guts match is going to be the whole second hour and then some and bleeding it. And it started in actually the first hour, right? End of the first hour with the entrances and stuff. So I know he's stressed for time and it's very stressful.
They actually had the time on this show too.
Yeah, they actually. Well, it's better to be a little extra time, you know, and instead of trying to rush out, you know, especially all the stunts they had planned at the end. So I don't know. You got to throw those highlights on there. You got to sacrifice something. Got to sacrifice something.
All right. There's an Eddie. Actually, you know what? As far as I remember from the promo, Yoshihashi and Goto have to actually beat the Bucks.
Yes,
to get
a non-title
title match.
Non-title. So.
All right, there was an Eddie Kingston video package about trust, and the only people that he trusts is like Moxley and Ruby Riott. He's got trust issues with Claudio, and this is a little bit of foreshadowing because Ruby Riott is a part of the match later. And yeah, now we have Blood and Guts, and I've two major takeaways. Now, this is a very polarizing match. There's a lot of people who love this match, and there's a lot of people who hated this match. It'll be interesting to get your feedback on this. But I had two main issues with this match. One, can we go back to 5-on-5? 6-on-6 was way too much.
That's what it was. I was like, why is this thing so long?
Yeah.
Well, they got the match beyond. Well, that's not working, but you know what I mean. The official start of the match when all 12 are in the ring, right?
Yeah.
Is that even took forever to get to the finish.
Yeah.
And it just dragged big time. Once was that Jericho's last guy, right? No, Kingston was last guy.
Yeah.
Once Kingston was last guy in, after a little bit, it just dragged.
The second negative to me was with 2.0 in this match. You basically had two JJ Dillons in this match. Having both of them as like the babyface side, they did not have anybody on their team who was what you would consider a mid card guy or a job guy.
Oh yeah.
And so I thought it really gave having the heels enter first kind of gave away the finish. Now, like the way that this match works is that the babyfaces win, but having those guys in the match, I thought they did a pretty good job of taking a hell of a beating and just bloodiness and stuff. But just going into it, I was like, okay, the heel side has two JJ Dillons on this, and basically for those who don't know what I'm talking about is the original War Games. whenever somebody got hurt and then J.J. Dillon had to be in the match, you're like, okay, I know who's losing this match because J.J. Dillon was a manager and he had to be in the match. Sometimes they would do J.J. Dillon and Paul Ellering in the match too. But that was my initial thought. Now, the other piece of this where I think a lot of people are frustrated is the cage in of itself should be the weapon.
Yes.
But the argument that I will say with this is their sort of slant to it. And also, they really promoted the craziness of this thing. And so I wasn't surprised that they were going to do it that way with a lot of the foreign objects, the tables, the chairs. I was like, I expected it because of what they promoted, but I understand if people did not like that part because historically the cage was the weapon and that and locking the baby faces and the heels together, not being able to get out, was the idea of the match. And in this one, everyone was able to get out. So I get those critiques, but let's break it down. Jericho Appreciation Society comes out with the Clockwork Orange get-ups, and I thought it was a pretty cool color thing because if you didn't know who these guys were, the fact that they were all in red, you could have probably figured out if you didn't know what was going on that, oh, those are probably the bad guys.
Yeah.
They were all in the same color, all in, you know, poor Jake Hager looked ridiculous, even more ridiculous than everybody else in this outfit
because fishnet shirt on.
So giant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sammy and Claudio start. Claudio just really ragdolls him for the majority of this match. And Daniel Garcia is in next, so the heels have the advantage.
That's Claudio, excuse me. He ragdolled Danny Garcia too.
Yeah,
it was a man playing amongst boys at this point in the beginning of this first 10 minutes of the match, whatever it was.
Claudio was impressive getting over as a giant human being. But as Daniel Garcia comes in, Claudio is doing the giant swing on Sammy. And so, you know, when we were kids and you would do the jump rope and you would kind of do like a double Dutch or something and you kind of have to time it to kind of jump in. Poor Daniel Garcia comes in and he's about to come in and save his buddy.
Yeah.
But then he's like, oh, wait, I got to time and jump over Sammy. So he kind of hesitated. And I was like, oh, he's doing the double Dutch here.
They should have done it where he was swinging and then Garcia's like hesitant, can't like find an opening to get in. Yeah. And then when he does, he gets hit.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So Wheeler Yuta's in next to make it 2-on-2. Then it's Jake Hager. Claudio and Jake Hager, as the two giant men in this match, have their little face off. Moxley evens the odds. Moxley brings in a chair and immediately fires this chair right at Hager's face. You hear the conk. Mox has also got a couple of different weapons with him. He's got a fork of some sort. He also had, what did they call them?
Those little skewers.
Yeah, little skewers.
Little skewer things, yeah.
And so he just had a ton of stuff just so that we could get to the blood part of Blood and Guts. Then Park, the 2.0, one of the 2.0 guys came in and he played a little cat and mouse because all of the heels were out. And so it's his turn to come in and they're supposed to have the advantage, but the baby faces have beat up all of the heels. So he's got to play little cat and mouse there. Mm-hmm. Ortiz comes in to even the odds. Then it's Matt Menard and then Santana. And so poor Santana.
Yeah.
So he brings in a table and a barbed wire bat. So it wasn't just good enough for the table. Had to bring the barbed wire bat in. Uh-huh. And he's about to give somebody a rock bottom, and his knee goes out. And that effectively takes him out of the entire match. This poor guy probably had an ACL or a kneecap or something go on with his knee. this match still had like a half an hour left in it, and he just had to go in the corner and kind of hang out with the doctor. So Jericho comes in, he brings in his Floyd the Bat. Eddie Kingston comes in, he's got a kendo stick, and he's brought in some sort of rubbing alcohol. There's a rubbing alcohol in there. And so finally, the match is ready to go. We can actually move towards a finish. There's thumbtacks. They rip apart the apron, so they expose the baseboards. And then at this point is where they start leaving. They start leaving to go to the top. Kingston, Jericho, Sammy Guevara all get to the top of the cage. Kingston throws Guevara off the top of the cage into a crash pad or some boxes or something.
So they never showed that, obviously, because we would all view be like, what was that thing there for? Why is this?
I mean, it was from last year's. Remember when Jericho took that bump on the thing and you could see it coming from a mile away?
Well, I know, but like the audience members like have to be like, okay, someone's going through that, because obviously, what's this square structure doing there for no reason? Like, did it have no functional?
Yeah.
You know, like, so once they showed it, I was like, oh, you know, that's why it's just there. It's just like a crash pad for Sammy.
I will say, Sammy is the most graceful stunt faller I have ever seen. That dude. He fell from like a really high spot, and he just fell so perfectly and beautifully.
Yeah, scary.
So on the top, Claudio does the giant swing on Jericho. They're still on the top of the cage. Kingston has Jericho in a stretch plum. Claudio has Menard. Was it a scorpion? Did he have him a scorpion or a Boston crab?
Scorpion, because he was doing that in WWE as a finisher. I think he does that for actually in honor of TJ Wilson, who had to retire because of the neck injury. And their tag team, remember that great tag team they had?
I don't, but I will take your word.
It was a really good team. It just, unfortunately, when TJ got hurt, it ended. It was pretty good.
And so they both have these submission moves on the heel. Kingston is desperately trying to get Jericho to tap out. Menard is obviously not Jericho, so he immediately taps out. And Kingston is upset because Claudio got the submission before he did. And they played this up, you know, because they had they said like 3 minutes left until they were going off TV. So you had all these dudes, you know, they had the three dudes on top and they're kind of talking like, what are we going to do? Finally, Mox comes up, Ortiz comes up, and they sort of celebrate. And the story is that, you know, Eddie Kingston has been talking big words about how he's going to kill Chris Jericho and he's not going to stop until X, Y, and Z. And he couldn't get the job done. Claudio, who's the new guy, he comes in. They have heat from supposedly way back, locker room heat, and they don't like each other. And so now he's mad that Claudio got the win, but he sort of calms himself down. Maybe his teammates were kind of talking him down. And he's like, okay. And so they raise all four arms. I think even before the match, they kind of just admitted, okay, we're on this team. You know, let's bump fists. And so going off the air, the babyface is won, but you know what's coming is there's something with Kingston and Claudio that is probably going to be a little bit of a longer storyline. It's not something that they're going to resolve on next week's Dynamite.
Back on some indie. He didn't do without saying it, didn't do the honors or something.
I also read some bullshit.
I don't even know what it is.
I also read that it was just sort of a locker room leader, like kind of tough love kind of thing. And that, you know, Eddie wasn't the best guy back then, not on the up and up, not the guy who he is now. So he probably, you know, felt that disrespect back then, but whatever it is, like, it seems like Eddie's got a few of those people who, you know, he's got some issues with. I think it gives his character a little bit of depth that you don't normally see in wrestling with characters. Like, yeah, maybe he gets his feelings hurt, or maybe he's so fiery and he's not that thoughtful. And he's got beef, and whatever it is, that's who he is. I don't I sort of thought that the whatever the beef was silly, more in real life than anything else. But, you know, if they told the story of, yeah, you know, Claudio's supposed to have a match with Eddie, and then Claudio's going to WWE, and, you know, then he doesn't put Eddie, whatever that story was that we had heard, that would have been silly if they actually told that to the fans. Like, if they actually described it as that to the fans would have probably been like, huh? What? Yeah. What's the reason here? But, yeah. You know, so they keep it a little vague. Excalibur was, you know, I forgot what he said, but they're keeping it vague. Maybe Eddie can do the thing like he did with Punk, because I think the story is probably very similar to the promo that he cut on Punk, right? Yeah. Punk, you know, said I was lazy or I was never going to make it or whatever. It could be something similar like that. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I just described the match. I kind of just went through it. Overall, what were your thoughts? What did you like? What did you not like? And you know, kind of where were you with this match? Because you've seen tons of War Games matches in the past. Yeah. And how did it hold up?
Not as good as some of the classics. The first one, the 92 War Games, of course, those are just great. I was kind of in the middle of this. You know, I didn't like the first part with Claudio ragdolling both Guevara and Garcia. It's fine for a little bit, but, like, I thought for too long the Bay Faces were in control the whole match. So there's, like, there should have been more of a swing with the heels having the advantage and everything. I thought the Bay Faces dominated too much. I was okay after the middle part. And then, like I said, once Eddie got in, I thought it just kind of dragged till they got to. And plus, when they started doing the finish, I'm talking about stuff on the top of the cage, like, any time this match technically could end with anyone submitting or surrendering, right? And so there's no focus on anyone in the cage during all the stuff as they're going up the cage. Like, I don't think they barely showed anything going on in the middle of the inside the cage. So that was weird. But also, I didn't, you know, obviously I did not like all the weapons. To me, like, it's the same criticism we have with the WWE or NXT when they did the War Games.
Yeah.
Right. Too much plunder. I rather have the cage get over. Right. And if you're going to bring one gimmick in, instead of the fireball stuff, which was stupid, that what Jericho was doing, he could have went back to the Floyd, his bat, and kept using that to get the advantage on. And finally, you know, he tries to, you know, ref Aubrey. This would be a better visual because she is her as a female trying to grab the bat from him. You can't bring that in there. And she's kind of dragging. He kind of shoves her down with the bat, brings it in, and now he has the bat, and he's taking control, and he's laying waste with Eddie's team, and he's, and then there they are celebrating the Jericho Appreciation Society, and now it's Eddie's turn to get in. And Eddie, you know, he's the one step ahead. He's a smart baby. He knows Jericho's going to pull some shit. He pulls out his bat, but it's the bat with the barbed wire now, right? And now he comes in, he starts boom, and then they hitting each guy with the barbed wire bat, and he gets to Jericho. And then he put the focus on Eddie and Jericho here. And I didn't like the finish because this should have been the end of this feud. This should have been it. The War Games, right? Or the Bloody Guts match. This should be Eddie finally conquering Jericho and all that. And at the end, I just felt like now we're mostly concentrating, like, what's going on with Cesaro and Eddie? Like, it took away from Eddie getting revenge on Jericho. I mean, is he going to get out? Like, what other match could Eddie do with Jericho that's going to be greater than Blood and Guts, right? Like, this should have been it. Eddie wins. Eddie conquers. Who cares about Claudio and some bullshit stuff? Like, Claudio needs to do his own thing with the, you know, whatever they're going to do with him going forward. He could be challenging Moxley for the titles down the line. It depends how long, you know, CM Punk's going to be out. If not, then he should be getting him ready for CM Punk sooner than later.
He's in the BCC, though.
Well, hey, he's a competitor, right? You know, he joined it as a favor to Brian, maybe. But at the end of the day, he wants to be a champion. And that AEW champion is the most prestigious championship in the world. And I know, Mox, you're a competitor. I'm a competitor. Like, let's do it, right? Let's do it. And I don't know. You could do something out of it, right? Same thing with Brian and Moxie, whatever. But anyways, at the end of the day, what really brought it down for me was the fact that where their focus is on Claudio and Eddie having issues instead of just, this should have been Eddie's moment over Jericho and ended this program. And if this is the end, that's a shitty way to end it. You know, just end it decisively with Eddie winning. So
I do wonder if we do get one more singles match between the two guys because of the way that it ended. But if not, I was kind of tired of it already.
Yeah. Well, I'm tired of it already too, you know?
And so moving on, I think it's okay, but telling that story and setting up sort of like the, you know, the best friends, bitter enemies kind of storyline, that doesn't always work, and it has to be well done in order for people to buy it. So I hope they have some good ideas there. And maybe it's not even going to come, because I was telling somebody, because they hated it. They hated Eddie's complaining. And I was like, well, like that's what he does. Eddie bitches about stuff. He's never happy about anything. That's his character. And I was like, but go back to like long-term storytelling. Like if the first time Hogan took the spotlight from Randy Savage as babyfaces, like that match by the time WrestleMania came, it wouldn't have meant as much, but it was the look that Savage gave Hogan the one time. And, you know, the fans feeling like, oh, what, you know, Hogan's getting a little close to Elizabeth here. What's going on? Like all the building up of that stuff, like really is what meant. And so if they are going to tell a little bit of a long-term storyline, Eddie being frustrated at the top of this cage because he didn't actually do what he told the fans he was going to do. And then being like, okay, I'm being a dick. Like we need to celebrate this team win. I got to be a team player. That is just sort of foreshadowing to when he finally gets too frustrated and probably turns heel down the line and whatever.
Do you think it's a good move to turn him heel? I think he comes off of the heel here. You know, complaining, you know, like,
well,
the team won.
I think he did. He did come off as a heel, and then he caught himself and he was like cool with the team stuff after. But that's the part that I think is the tease. I don't know if he should be a heel or not. I don't know if Cesaro should be a heel.
No.
But yeah, there's intriguing stuff there that is a little nuanced and that is not a very easy story to tell in like this black and white way. So I'm intrigued about the creative. And like I said, maybe it doesn't happen for a little while and we get this longer version of this story, which I'm fine with too. But I would like to know, like, you know, a little bit more of what happens. Because like you said, the blood and guts should have been like, this is the end of the feud, and it didn't really feel that way.
Well, to have issue between Eddie and Claudio going forward, they had to be together because they're both in different groups. Eddie has his own group, right? His own friends that he hangs out with, Pride and Powerful, whatever, Ortiz and Santana. And, of course, Claudio's in the Blackpool Combat Club. So other than, you know, with this feud with Jericho Appreciation Society, that's why they're together, right? But if it's... Now, if this is going to continue, then they can be together, right? Claudio and Eddie still have to be around together in the same space. But if this is the end, why is there the need for Blackpool Combat Club to hang out with Eddie, right?
Because of Mox? Eddie and Mox are like best friends.
I know. They can be best friends out of the arena. But like when it comes to like wrestling business, what is the Blackpool Combat Club needed to hang out with Eddie and Santana for? And Ortiz.
Well, I mean, I don't think they need to hang out with them necessarily. Like you said, they go their own separate ways, but the connective tissue, the link is Eddie and Mox, and they'll always have each other's back.
Yeah, but what I know, I'm just saying, like there needs to be a reason on camera why they're together, right? Like, there needs to be a reason why they're getting together to help each other out, fighting a common enemy, like the Jericho Appreciation Society. Now, to keep this going, I think they need a common enemy to fight. And if that's going to be Jericho Appreciation Society, that's going to suck, because how can you end it past – you already did this, the biggest match you could do between the two groups, a war game / blood and guts match, right? So they're going to be – it's going to be forced then to have a confrontation, unless they just – Next week, it's an interview segment where Tony Schiavone wants to bring it up. What was Eddie so frustrated about? And Eddie starts talking trash about Claudio. Here comes Claudio, like, wondering why. And I just don't want Eddie to be a heel right now. He's a lovable, everyman, tough guy that the fans can relate to. And I think you stay your course with that. I think who cares about this internet BS between this bullshit heat between these guys that happened sometime on the indie scene, which for a lot of fans with Claudio has been was a very, 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 very long time because this guy was in the WWE was he in there for like 10 years plus? It seems like that to me. I don't know. Maybe that was 10 years.
Did he have hair back then?
I don't know. Like, you know, it's like, dude. And you're going to try to retell that story. And I just think it's lame. And I'd rather just Eddie get the big win. Yeah. And just continue on with his rise in popularity. And, you know, once you get a champion that he can challenge, that he could really do some business with. I mean, CM Punk is there. They kind of did something there. So maybe a Mox, friends versus friend. You know, you could do that. Like, again, I don't know.
And look, I don't want it to happen necessarily right now. But if it happens in 9 months, and if Eddie is a giant babyface and then he heel turns in 9 months, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that either. Like, you know, the guys are going to go heel and baby, you know, it's like, you know, Randy Orton, right? Randy Orton's been in WWE for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. How many times has he gone heel and baby? Same with Big Show.
But we don't want that, right, here in AEW. AEW is supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to do what WWE does, not do what WWE does wrong, right? Yeah,
but what I'm saying is if he has been in this company for a long time, if he has been a heel and he has been a babyface, it's not like they just switched him too quickly. Like, he came during the pandemic in 2020,
yeah.
and it's 2022, and if he turns heel by 2023, like, that's a decently long run as a babyface. So I'm just saying that if that is the goal, it's not like he had just switched and he's switching back and they're doing the Big Show thing with him. Especially if he's going to be in this company for a long time, that is going to generally happen, right? You're going to turn,
sure,
for creative reasons. Your character's going to turn.
Sure, I'm sure he'll turn heel. Hopefully, very, very, very far in the future in this company. But right now, in my gut, what I see from the fans and their connection with Eddie Kingston, I'm not doing anything to put any fans to hate Eddie Kingston. I want to continue to ride this love that they have for him, this working man, this, you know, took him from the bottom now to the top, and they want to see him, you know. I think he should win the title, not for very long. He should get the big win and can lose it quickly, like in a month or less, you know. But I think there should be that amazing moment in his hometown or in his own, you know, home state. You know, Arthur Ashe, whatever. Just I would start working towards that.
No, I agree with you. I'm not saying he should turn heel right now, but I'm saying if you set the, if you put a little, a few paw prints in the dirt that, you know, we look back on in 9 months and go, oh, that's kind of where it started. I'm fine with that. But I that I've been a proponent
I know.
I even asked Mox his thoughts and he's like, that's a really good idea. You mm-hmm. know, but this was way back when I was like, yeah, yeah. He should beat Kenny for, you know, for that Mick Foley over Triple H, you know,
exactly
thing.
Exactly.
But, you know, well, whatever. And maybe he will still have that moment because, you know, he does, lose a good amount of matches and he wins a good amount of matches. So it's not like he's been on this like giant winning streak to where you're like, okay, now this is where we're going with him. They've kept it pretty even, you know, so I can't tell if he is on that trek or not. It doesn't seem like it, at least yet, mm-hmm. that he's on that trek.
Yeah. I mean, you could do something where Mox and him team up again, and maybe Regal's not really happy with it, right? Maybe they have other goals, and I don't know. You could do stuff like that, but I don't know. At the end of the day, I just don't want Kingston to look like, just treat it like people. I don't want people to question him as a heel. I want him to focus.
He's over
right now. Don't mess with it. This stuff is unnecessary. Let Claudio, he just got there, you know, start giving Claudio just some wins on television, right? Have him have some good matches on television, some wins, and then get him in position for a title shot and down the line. And, you know, like, damn, let's do Ricky Starks versus Eddie, right? Let's give, you know, let's do Hobbs versus Eddie and give them a nice little program, keep him busy, and that will help out Starks a lot because he's so talented and so charismatic. It'll help out Hobbs a lot because he's got so much potential and you feel like he should be a big star, but they're just in the middle just treading water. Like, just, it's a nice little mid-card feud with Eddie, who's over, and it can help those guys out, keep them busy for a while, and move on from this Jericho nonsense and let Cesaro do other things.
I said that the show, because there was only a few matches, and we went to the full 90 minutes on this show, so there you go. A lot of stuff to talk about, even though the show didn't have a lot of wrestling matches. All right, that'll be it from here. You know, we're not going to have a big party at Dave's for Money in the Bank, so we won't have any stories to tell next week. But, yeah, we'll be back, and we'll talk about upcoming schedule, because I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks, I'll have one specific thing pre-taped, and I kind of wonder if you and I should pre-tape something, maybe look at some specific show or something that's a little bit more of an evergreen show, because I won't be able to watch all the TV that I have been watching in order to talk about, especially Dynamite. So, but we'll figure that out, and we'll keep everyone in the loop on that. So, for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.